One of the big news stories breaking overnight in the automotive industry is that Toyota announced it's going to invest $3.5 billion thereabouts, a 10-year plan to develop, build batteries here in the U.S. The good news is that starting in 2025, they're going to create 1,750 new jobs creating EV batteries here in the United States. We still don't know where those first plants will open. We hope that Michigan will be more competitive than it was when it was trying to get Ford's battery plants. And so I would hope that our folks, our good friends who do such a great job up at the MEDC, going to be working hard to reel that one in. But in the meantime, it shows that so many automakers are faced with a real dilemma when it comes to investing scarce capital. And then that is, do you invest how much into EVs and how much do you invest into internal combustion engines, which are still going to be around for a while? That's the dilemma that was highlighted so well in a new study coming from Deloitte Consulting. Jason Kaufman is the U.S. automotive consulting leader for Deloitte, and he joins us live on the Paul W. Smith Show this Monday morning. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Guy. Thanks for having me.
Give us a chance, some insights from this study that you did on this real conundrum that's facing, especially suppliers who don't have the capital heft that maybe the big three or, you know, the big six do.
Yeah, with the 1-2 punch of COVID and the chip shortage, I mean, suppliers are definitely feeling the crunch, you know, sitting between the OEMs and the rest of their supply chain for sure. They weathered COVID quite well. Cash was still relatively available and cheap. But now with plants running at a much reduced capacity due to the chip shortage, you know, working capital is that much thinner. On top of, as you highlighted, the EV investments that are happening, you know, how do you invest in that future from a product portfolio standpoint and being able to keep up with the demands of all the new pivots within our industry?
Understanding it's not just a choice between the ICEs and EVs, there are still investment challenges for hybrids, which are going to probably be an even bigger player, at least for the foreseeable future, than EVs.
Yeah, the combination of powertrains and that proliferation, you know, as we move forward, I mean, the battery electric platforms that everyone's developing and moving forward with in order to hit all the regulations and various carbon goals that we have to meet, you know, across the globe is moving. But the plug-in hybrid, you know, solutions are quite solid and will continue to be an important component. And our latest consumer study shows, you know, the trend of consumers adopting pure EV, you know, the range anxiety and the like, and just the cost point, even with a $7,500 credit, is starting to erode those risks. We saw a drop from 75% resistance in wanting to stay with ICE in our study at the beginning of this year to last month. We did a quick refresh and it's dropped to 65%. So I think that proliferation is happening and the adoption of hybrid is an easier step for many.
There's a real problem. I think it's a perception problem, Jason, with a lot of consumers. And I think Mark Phelan in the Detroit Free Press over the weekend did a good job talking about this. If you and I are driving down the highway, we see huge signs showing where gas stations are, telling us the price. And, you know, it's very in your face and easy to locate. Not so much with chargers. There's a lot of chargers out there. And good heavens, in some cases, they're hidden behind a Dunkin' Donuts or in awkward places. They're not very well publicized. That's something that has to be addressed going forward because it's kind of a no-brainer that the EV industry is really booting right now.
Yeah, I think that there's an overall shift of that consumer that does buy, right? One, if you're going to adopt EV, you need to be all in. You need to invest in the charger, the higher speed charger in your home, you know, if that's the $1,500 option versus just the 110 volt and have the discipline of, you know, I'm charging. So you're starting out the day fully charged. But as you share, I mean, as you're moving and being able to navigate the power transfer, you know, as you fill up a gas powered vehicle, you know, pretty easy and attainable. But having, you know, the software that's been rolled out by most of the OEMs and then other apps that can help you navigate and understand. I think one of the questions will be, you know, will that infrastructure be as reliable as a gas station, and ensuring those high speed moments, you know, that infrastructure's up. So I think there is an opportunity, one, the proliferation of chargers, but then also just right. the maintainability and making sure they're working as advertised.
Well, and also putting together some really useful apps to help people locate them, and maybe to go the extra mile, which is to start throwing maybe, you know, some green signs in the air to let people know, hey, we're here and we're ready to charge you if you need that, just to let people that are driving gasoline-powered engines to know that it's there if they need it, if they want to make that transition. I did want to ask you, as you were talking about the supply chain issues and how the semiconductor shortage has hit both suppliers and OEMs, when you look at the resourcing, it's not just semiconductors, it's also nickel, cobalt, lithium. How problematic is that going forward, especially knowing that while Canada may have some of those resources, the United States doesn't?
Now, you highlight a good point, Guy, and I think the chip shortage is just, you know, what we're dealing with at the moment. The other commodities you shared and copper's now started to become an issue, and it's not because of the auto industry. It's the adjacent industries or even further away that's causing the issues. So with copper, construction and all the development that's happening is now putting a drain. So I think part of what we need to do is ensure that we have the ability to illuminate our supply chains. And once you've been able to illuminate and understand where those risks exist, then how are you going to address it? And how do you understand the priority of those risks? No different than Toyota had identified, you know, the chip shortages back coming out of the tsunami that occurred and had been sitting on those, you know, eight month, you know, supply for many, many years, and then had the great payoff with this last issue.
I did see a study recently that Joanne Muller from Axios was writing about, a good friend to my program, talking about the fact that people are driving right now in cars, new cars, that have a lot of technology in them, some safety-related, some semi-autonomous, and they really don't value them yet, that they kind of feel like they're paying a lot for technology and features that they didn't ask for and don't want. How big a problem is that for manufacturers?
No, we're seeing the same coming out of our consumer study, where consumers expect a lot, but don't always want to pay for it. The other aspect is, how do you keep up? I think the OEMs are doing a great job, and the suppliers are doing a great job on the innovation and making sure the customer experience is more than just powertrain.
Right, and you're right. There is a disconnect between wanting it and then being willing to pay for it, and that becomes an even bigger conundrum as we start to add more autonomy and more safety features are mandated in many instances. Jason, we thank you so much for this report from Deloitte, raising a lot of important questions and issues for the supplier community. Have yourself a great day. Jason Kaufman with Deloitte.